This text we heard is perhaps one of the most comforting and one of the most troubling texts in the New Testament. I've used this sermon not quite a year ago on my birthday, July 19 of last year, to preach my father's funeral service. Quite a comforting text as we think about going home and all the images about home and about a dwelling place, which is rich for us. But this is also perhaps one of the most troubling texts for some of us. When Jesus remarks, "No one comes to the Father except through me," too often the sentence is distorted into a dogma of exclusion. As if Jesus is saying, if you're not a Christian, you can't be saved. There is no other way. And as we'll see, I think this is a drastic misunderstanding of what Jesus is actually up to in this story. So, what is Jesus up to in this story? Well, I think it's important to get a context here of what's gone on before. Just the chapter before in John 13, we have John's account of the Last Supper, of Jesus in that very intimate time that we reenacted in our fellowship hall a month or so ago, as we remembered that story where Jesus ate with his disciples and then stooped and washed their feet as we washed each other's feet. Servanthood on display among friends, demonstrating to his disciples how he wants them to live, demonstrating the way of faithfulness in our world. This, Jesus is saying, is what power looks like, loving and serving the world, stooping to wash feet. And then, in this chapter, Jesus begins what's often called his farewell discourse, giving them guidance and consolation as he prepares to leave them. So the broad strokes of this section, the farewell discourse, you might say that Jesus is on his way out, the Spirit is on her way in, and the post-Easter church is being born. A community that Jesus insists will go on to do even greater things than he has done. Now, we tend to romanticize the time that Jesus was here on earth as the greatest time to ever have been alive, when one could walk with Jesus in his footsteps. But for John, the greater work is right now, when Spirit-abiding, Spirit-drenched church is using that power to love and to serve the world in line with John chapter 13, washing feet. Now, what's the tone of this passage? We don't get a sense of the tone when we read it. We're doing interpretive work and reading and trying to understand how this should be read, with what kind of tone is being set here by Jesus when he's addressing his disciples. But we can get a sense, perhaps, of Jesus' tone by, again, setting the context. Jesus here is trying to reassure his anxious, heartbroken disciples. And why are they anxious and heartbroken? Because Jesus had just delivered a 1-2 punch, you might say. First, the news that I'm only going to be with you a little longer, and where I'm going, you cannot come. What? And the second, then, by extension, the whole group, then, Jesus says, will deny and desert him in his imminent hour of need. Their leader, the one on whom they had pinned all their hopes for themselves and for their world. He's going to be executed by the state. And what would become of them? For the disciples, there could scarcely be worse news. They're stunned and beginning to panic. And at precisely this moment, this week's passage begins. Do not let your hearts be troubled. This context of crisis and desperation, I think, is one of the keys to understanding what's happening next. When Jesus' response, so far from condemning them, so far from a lecture on salvation or who will get to heaven, is actually Jesus providing tender pastoral care and the best pastor possible, assuring his companions that his imminent departure is not abandonment, but rather it's the way to an even greater, deeper intimacy. It's as if he's saying on one level, I'm about to leave you, yes, but on a deeper level, we'll be closer than ever. Take heart, trust me, and trust the one who sent me. But Thomas says for the group, how can we know the way? And Philip backs him up by asking Jesus to show us the Father, as if to say, at least if you're going away, give us some kind of map, some kind of GPS, will you? So that we know the way to God's house? Jesus' response amounts to this. You already know the way. You've been walking the way. You know the way that you've been traveling. We've been on the way. We've been experiencing the truth. We've been living the life. You know the way we've been traveling. So just keep on it. Keep on this way. And I'll be right there with you. Because I'm the way. I'm the truth. I'm the life. So keep on going. Keep on learning. Keep on living toward God. And we'll be continuing to be together in this. Yes, in a different form. The Spirit will be on you, among you, within you, empowering you, enabling you, comforting you, giving you all you need for this way. In other words, Jesus insists that even though he's leaving his followers' everyday lives of living out his teachings, especially the new commandment for them to love one another as Jesus has loved them, will surely be a sign of their ongoing communion with him. So the tone of this teaching, unlike many of us grew up hearing it, isn't stern admonition. If you want salvation, you better be this way, you better do that, you better believe these things about me. But on the contrary, here is a tender-hearted tone of pastoral care with his dear friends, his aim to assure and console them. Don't worry. Keep following my instructions, walking in the way. Today, you'll walk in my footsteps, but in the days to come, you'll be my footsteps. I'll walk in your shoes, you'll walk in my shoes. And we will walk this way together. You will be my body. You will be my feet. You will be the ones carrying forth this way into the world, showing it to all of people that this way is accessible to them as well. You see, I'm not abandoning you. On the contrary, I will abide with you, and you will abide with me. I will not leave you orphaned. And the upshot of all this, keep going on the way, and we'll be in the way together, closer than ever. Jesus promised them peace. And surely John is writing in Greek, but behind the Greek is the Hebraic understanding of shalom. Not necessarily only the absence of conflict, but the vibrant presence of personal and communal well-being. Thriving, you might say. My peace I give you, Jesus says near the end of this chapter. The sentiment that he would again repeat when he appears to his disciples after his passion and resurrection. This is the way. We look at Jesus' life to understand better that way. It's the way of his life. It's the way of his death. Not through domination and power of coercion, but through the power of love, sacrifice, servanthood, justice, shalom, joy, peace, wholeness in the kingdom for all people to live in right relationship in this way. And ironically, the first followers of Jesus were not referred to in the book of Acts as Christians, but as followers of the way. Jesus prepares those who belong to the way by empowering them, reassuring them that you're going to do greater things than I have done. Greater things than even Jesus has done? How can this be? Jesus has done some amazing feats at this point in the Gospel of John. You've heard about these healings, about changing water to wine, and the last time I know, I didn't have that power. The restoring of sight to the blind, the raising of Lazarus from the dead. We have preached our way through much of the Gospel of John this year. And yet Jesus boldly predicts you'll do even greater marvels than I have done, implying that these disciples, so filled with dread and anxiety, are about to be filled with power because of their relationship with Jesus, because of their journey on this way that brings empowerment and joy and shalom. Now, when you think of PMC, you immediately think of power, don't you? What's those chuckles I hear? No? Maybe warmth and friendliness and welcome and hospitality? Probably not power in the top five list. Because most of us feel really disempowered most of the time, don't we? We hear the headlines. Just last night in Texas, another mass shooting. What will we do? We didn't even know how to pray anymore. We feel powerless. And the promise of our democracy is that each of us will feel empowered to shape the direction of society. But in the last election, when you voted, did you feel power surge through your veins as you cast your ballot? Probably not. And we sometimes wonder cynically, what's the use? Why try to change anything? What can I do as one little individual to shape anything, be it the church or our community or society at large? But this morning's gospel leaves us with Jesus' astounding promise. And it was to these that Jesus promised, just like us, maybe even more anxious, those disciples, than we are. That Jesus looks at them and sees their fright, their powerlessness, and says, "You're going to do even greater things than I do." Did they believe it? Do we believe it? Do we believe that our church is empowered to do even greater work than was done by Jesus? Well, let's think about it a little bit. How did this Gospel of John originate to begin to tell the story of Jesus? It began the much the same way as all the Gospels began, with Jesus beginning to call an ordinary, very ordinary, you might say a very even dysfunctional group of people around himself. And it seems that's the way Jesus works. Empowering ordinary people. The Gospel of John itself, written by some of those early followers of Jesus, is itself a fulfillment of Jesus' promise. Jesus preached some powerful sermons, did some mighty acts, but no one would have known about those. We wouldn't know about them if it hadn't been for John and for others that came along and wrote down what they remember. And that those stories were preserved, were canonized, were fought over, but come to us so that we can continue to tell the story. A miracle in itself of a power that transcends Jesus' own power when he was on earth. And as your pastor, if I had time in the sermon, I could testify the truth of Jesus' promise that you will do even greater works. I would point to you. Jesus raised the dead, and I've seen some of you raised up from heart-rending tragedy and loss and continue to build your lives. Jesus touched the eyes of the blind, and I've seen you open the eyes of some despairing person to the vision of a new world simply by loving that person, by being there, by standing with that person, giving them hope when they felt little hope. Jesus touched and healed people. I've seen you touch the sick. I've seen you visit. I've seen you bring meals. I've seen you come alongside, bringing healing. And Jesus welcomed the outcast and the children. And you've opened wide these doors to children, to the community, to the LGBTQ plus community that often, so often, experiences exclusion and more pain. And I could go on. Now, it takes a great deal of faith to believe that Jesus meant what he said when he said that we would do greater things than he did. But look around you. Think about the way that God's power is present here among us. And with a text from 1 Peter that Ken read for us, the early church here must be struggling as a congregation. And the writer says, and again, an ordinary writer writing to encourage a discouraged people, You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's own people. What an astounding thing to say to this little group of early believers hanging on by their fingernails in the face of imperial persecution and scoffing. The word priest is rarely used in the New Testament. When the title priest is used, such as in the letter to the Hebrews, it's always applied just to Jesus. But here is a different case. You are priests, just like Jesus. Ordinary people who's living out their faith, who are walking in this way, walking with this truth, walking with this life. Become the ultimate preachers who tell the world about the life with God in Christ. It's a great deal to claim for ordinary people like us. We are God's great answer to what's wrong with the world. Maybe feels a little hubris even. But we are God's voice, God's feet, God's hands, and God's heart in the world. I invite you today to take some time to feel the power of love flowing through your veins, enabling you to serve those around you in this coming week. Amen.